Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, poetry on steroids. My guest is Anis Mojgani. He is a poet extraordinaire. Anis, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dave.
He has a new book called The Pocket Knife Bible, and I want to talk to him about that. But I also want to talk to him about what it's like being a poet. Do you have a day job?
Being a poet is my day job.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. how do you manage that?
What my day usually looks like is I'd sometimes describe as what I do as being an international man of leisure, because basically I tend to get up in the morning like around 8 or 9, I guess, and I make my way to the coffee shop in my neighborhood, and I'll sit there for anywhere from 2 to 5 hours and try to make myself present for doing work. And work might be writing new things, it might be editing old stuff, it might be putting together my book, it might be managing my touring schedule, writing emails, all that stuff. So I spend that in the first part of my day, and then the rest of the time I kind of wander and do whatever. And I'm on the road about 3 to 5 months out of the year. I'll do usually 15 to 40 shows over the course of the year. And the shows that I do typically, like, you know, it caters to whatever the event might need to do or be asking of me. But generally, it's kind of, if one can envision or imagine like a stand-up special from, say, like Louis C.K. or Aziz Ansari, except like instead of jokes being the base, it's poems. And so it's just me existing on a stage for 60 to 80 minutes. Dialoguing
so
with the
you
audience.
Can you can make a living being a poet.
I make a living being a
so,
poet.
So you know, you're kind of a classic American example of the melting pot, with a Persian father, African American mother.
True.
And you know, at what point did you say I want to be a poet?
I don't know. Like I went to school for a lot more lucrative career, which was to study comic books. And while I was there, I started writing and performing a lot more poetry. And when I was done with my studies, like poetry was something that it didn't really fall into me, but it kind of fell into me, that it was something that people seemed to be responding very much to it. I went to school in Savannah, Georgia, and a lot of the folks there were just very responsive positively to the work that I was doing with my poetry. And when I was done at SCAD, I wanted to explore more my relationship with poetry, and I didn't know exactly how to go about making a living at it, but I thought that would be rad if I could, and I knew of certain individuals that were doing that. So I just sort of I put myself in that direction and really just wanted to focus on what my relationship with my poetry was, and that led me to here.
Well, let's stop talking about poetry and hear some.
All right.
What are we going to hear?
I feel like doing a little poem, so I was going to do a little poem.
A little
and
poem.
And maybe we'll do a bigger poem later.
Okay.
This is a brief background. Like, so this is a tiny little poem that I wrote that is the very first love poem I ever wrote was for a friend of mine, like back when I was 17, and a few years ago she had posted a photograph on her Facebook of a tiny little lemon tree in a little pot of soil. And it had this caption that read, "See the lemon tree I grew from a seed. See how big you've gotten." And I thought it was such a silly and dumb and sweet sentiment that I was inspired to write a poem about a lemon tree. So here's Rosie's lemon tree. "My beautiful lemon tree I grew from a seed. How big you have gotten. You were so little when you were a seed, and now so big. And soon you will carry such round and lovely lemons, yellow, dimpled. when they are too big for your thin branches and they leave this kitchen of mine. Ask them not to forget it, this kitchen of ours. It is my favorite room in the house. And Lemon Tree, when you pick up to follow, please do think of me. I will think of you. Here, when my hands are far too empty and my tongue is far too sweet, I will think of the quiet poem of your shape. Lemon Tree, please, bring a scarf with you. Wherever you end up may be cold. And if it isn't, perhaps you will one day vacation someplace where it is.
Lemon Tree, Razi's Lemon Tree, read by Anis Moshgani. So, what can poetry talk about and what can't poetry talk about?
Nothing with regards to the second part of that, and everything with regards to the first part. You know, I last night I did a show, and this young lady afterwards was like, I pretty much don't like poetry, but I liked yours. And it's funny how, like, that's like this weird kind of pseudo compliment that people feel like they're giving to poets sometimes.
I mean, like, I don't like Persians, but I like you.
Exactly. You know, and you know, it's not that I take offense to anything, but it's interesting to me that people, even when being handed something, that their reaction is, I'm enjoying this and I like this and I'm responding and connecting with this, even if they have a history of like what their idea and concept of poetry is, and it stacks against as something that they don't like, even when they're greeted with something like, well, I'm enjoying this. So, like, as opposed to realizing and allowing it to their definition and idea of poetry to then be expanded, they still sit in this place of, oh, I don't like poetry, but this is all right. And that's interesting to me, you know, because, you know, honestly, like, poetry, like, the range of what it is and what it can be is limitless. I mean, like, at its heart, essentially, it's just some way for us to process and communicate the human experience. And there's so many different human experiences that there's no way to pigeonhole simply what poetry is and what a poem can or cannot do. You know, I mean, like, that was a poem that I wrote about a lemon tree. You know, I'm allowed to write a poem about a lemon tree, just like I'm allowed to write a poem about what it means to be brown and mistaken for a terrorist, what it means to fart and poop, what it means to be, like, filled with grief and sorrow from the suicides of friends of mine. You know, like, that there's this limitless scope of what it is that I'm allowed to write about, because essentially I'm simply processing my internal information and how it reacts with the external world around me.
You know, roughly 30 years ago, the whole sort of poetry slam movement began, you know, mm-hmm. coming out of the New Yorican Cafe in New York City, largely. I mean, that was kind of the first place that was really known, at least as far as I know. So you kind of came of age in a sort of different era of poetry. Prior to that, I mean, it had been much more restrained. Is that fair? I mean, talk about the world of poetry that's out there.
It's definitely different now, I think. And I think that there's always been these cycles and these communities of poetry doing something very different than what folks expected from it. You know, I mean, like, the 20 years before Slam, 20, 30 years before Slam occurred, you know, the Beat Generation was thriving, and the readings and the things that they wrote and shouted about were very different than what was happening in poetry circles in academia at that time. So there's always been, like, you know, a bubblingness of, like, things that are kind of, like, louder and fresher and different that speak to, like, a lot of people that might not be spoken to in common circles of poetry. But with the Slam, I think that has stuck around a bit more, largely simply because the face of society has also changed. That, I mean, when I started getting introduced to spoken word and being attracted to the idea of performance and competitive poetry, there was these things that I was being introduced to, but there was also so very little way to really access it still. I mean, I remember in college coming across a UCD of a Poetry Slam Finals and just listening to that over and over and over again and scouring the baby that the internet was for just, like, written text of poems. And now you just go to YouTube, type in, you know, poetry, and you have thousands and thousands of performances. Right. So one is has so much more access to performance poetry and spoken word, and so that breeds a very different reality, I think, and relationship between a more quote unquote vital poetry that people can have access to.
You know, when you were talking about how people's, you know, preconceptions of poetry may not fit with their experience of it, they may assume that it's awful, but then love it when they actually see it. It reminds me of people talking about jazz, which is one of my passions. And I, when you were talking, I kept thinking of Frank Zappa's line, you know, jazz is not dead, it just smells funny. And I just wondered if, you know, that felt like your description of poetry.
That feels like a very astute description of poetry. You know, I mean, like every X amount of years, you know, we joke about it, I think, like within a lot of the literary communities, how like every few years it seems there's an article that pops up that laments that poetry is dead. And it's like, I'm surrounded by amazing poets. And there's amazing books of poetry on the shelf, and there's amazing like performances that I see like over the course of the year. And so it's like poetry is definitely not dead. It just might, your connection and relationship and introduction to it might be dead, or you might not know what avenue to like walk down to find it. And so the idea that poetry is not dead, it just might smell funny, you know, like that. I think that's very astute, particularly since it's like it's constantly shifting and changing, and you know, like all art is an organic thing, and so it's not gonna remain stagnant. You're not gonna say, all right, well, this is what painting is, and like that's what painting has remained throughout all the centuries. I mean, like artwork is consistently and constantly changing and growing and developing into strange new ways, and poetry is the same way.
All right, so let's we heard the Lemon Tree. let's hear something a little edgier.
All right, we'll do. So this is called Today's Love is brought to you by the letter John Sands. High five me with your heart. High thousand me with your hearts. I know you have many of them. We all love many things. I love cheeseburgers. I love biscuits. I love little pancakes. I love more than just things that I chew with my mouth. I have loved my wife. Sometimes I have chewed my wife's shoulder in my mouth. Sometimes my wife has been annoyed by this. But still, sometimes my wife did love me back. Some things that I have loved have never loved me back. Random racist man upon the street, while your rhetoric may anger me, I still have love for you, though you probably will not love me back. Walrus, I love you. Though were I to be around you, you would probably gore me with your tusks. Perhaps this is not a good example, as the wild unknowing of wild creatures is not the same as not loving something back. Perhaps also because I actually do not love the walrus, but simply mention him here because there's a small figurine of a walrus on the coffee table as I write this poem. However, I do love the elephant. However, he too would probably gore me with his tusks. Again, not out of unlove, but perhaps fear. I do not love fear, but I respect him, and that he loves me, testing how well I carry the sword of my intent through the land of the Midnight Farm. The land of the Midnight Farm, it is a strange and scary place. There are perhaps serial killers and or possums lurking in its darkness. The serial killer may love me, but in no way I wish to be loved. Their love may involve the removal of my skin and the wearing of it out to the club. The possum may love me, but I do not love the possum. In fact, I hate the possum, solely because of how ugly I find the possum to be. Yes, I realize this is a shallow reason to dislike something, so I'm trying, possum. I'm trying to not love you so much. Instead, possibly just be ambivalent to your existence. But oh, I want to hate you like I hate the thought of bee stings, black people, and beans. I put black people in there just to see if y'all were paying attention. I freaking love black people. I love white people. Though sometimes I find both of them to be trifling. Don't get me wrong. My only mother is black. My only wife was white. But damn, if we humans aren't a trifling animal at times, but still, I love you. You mountains of trifle and futility. Of perseverance and lightness, of incessant rowing towards the sun, even while facing it, wondering why there is no forward momentum. Turn around. Look at my many hands, holding up my many hearts in a mini high-fived salutation to you, Nina Simone, Paul Newman. So many things in this world that I have loved. Rising with the sun, sleeping in late. Little pancakes. And even though she's now gone, my wife's shoulders. Thank you.
That's poet Anis Mojgani. Tomorrow we'll continue my conversation with Mojgani.